the reason we have to save, well, part of the reason, we wouldn't be starting with NFL today regardless, because a legend
yeah.
is retiring.
The Mamba, the Black Mamba.
The Black Mamba. Kobe announced his retirement. Was it yesterday? It was yesterday, I believe.
It was
over the weekend.
I mean, he knew for a long time this is his last season. He's finally let everyone, the public, know that he's giving up. He's hanging up the boots.
So let's hear from Kobe real quick.
I mean, you know, I've known for a while, right? And I've always said, you know, if anything changes, you know, then, you know, I'll change my mind. But, you know, the problem became for me, it's, you know, what does that really mean? I mean, a decision like this, you can't make that decision based on, you know, outside circumstances. I mean, it has to be an internal decision. And finally, I just had to just accept the fact that I don't want to do this anymore. You know, and I'm okay with that. And, you know, once I accepted that, then it became time to just let everybody know. I mean, why not? I mean, it's just, you know, it takes a load off my shoulders and everybody else's, and I think it's just the right thing to do. No, not really. I mean, I was it's the first time playing it back-to-back, so I was a little drained for other reasons. You know what I mean? But no, I mean, it's you know, I honestly feel good about it. I really do. I mean, I really feel at peace with it, and, you know, excited for what's to come, honestly.
So what's your takeaway from that, Derek?
Having been like a lifelong Laker fan, grew up in LA myself, watching Kobe Bryant, the whole Kobe Bryant Shaq era. That's what I grew up watching basketball. So Kobe Bryant's is basketball to me. You know, he is a legend. He can do no wrong in LA, which has kind of been good and bad. A lot of, you know, unfortunate bads come out of it, but you know, you got much respect for the guy. You can't say as much as you kind of, everyone knew it was about time. It's definitely hard to see the guy go and not see him out there on the court anymore, especially ever. Like, this is it. It's going to be kind of different, you know? Mm-hmm. He was such a staple in the game for 20 years. He's played four. He's been in here.
Yeah, I thought one thing that he mentioned that I found particularly interesting was when he mentioned that, you know, he grew up in the league. I mean, think about it. You know, he was drafted when he was 18, and he spent more years of his life playing in the National Basketball Association than not.
And that's, half of those years he probably doesn't even remember.
Right. And that's got to be a weird experience, kind of a crazy, you know, transitioning to the next stage of your life after playing, living 20 years with the spotlight in L.A. of all places squarely on you.
Yeah, which is definitely, you can see him grow up. When you have a spotlight on you, you become so accustomed to it. So this kind of like farewell tour, I definitely feel like, you know, he gets to talk about his favorite subject himself.
Sure.
For some time.
Well, you know what? I think he's earned that, right? You put in 20, I think to be called a veteran in the league is, you know, right after champion and, you know, all pro, all star. I think a veteran is some of the highest praise you can get, just because to have that longevity and to play in the league for so long, I think is obviously an accomplishment in itself. But we're talking about a guy here, third all-time scoring in postseason right behind Jordan Kareem, third all-time regular season scoring right behind Kareem and Karl Malone, five championships, two without Shaq, two MVP or NBA Finals MVPs, 17-time All-Star. I mean, gold medal winner. The accolades, I could go on. But this guy's been incredible for so many years. And I know for me personally, I know for the past couple of years with the injuries, a lot of people have been saying, you know, Kobe's time is coming. It's now. You know, he's been fading. And after listening to that press conference, I thought Kobe articulated himself very well. He sounded at peace with his decision, which I find a little hard to believe myself, because that guy is just a competitor's competitor, you know. And again, this basketball has been his life, has been the dominating force in his life for almost his whole life. You know, his father was a professional basketball player, you know, so this has been all he's known for so long. But with all that said, I think whenever he decides to go work for ESPN, ABC, TNT, he's going to do great. They're going to cut. He's still going to be making millions of dollars, and it's just going to go on. But
I mean, having the best in the press conference, he talked about how. I guess his passion for basketball has waned, and he was talking about how when his mind would wander, it used to wander about basketball all the time, every single time, and now it doesn't do that anymore. So for him, I think, and he mentioned also how he's tired of playing the game. He's tired of the struggle that he's going through right now, which, you know, that's when you can see, I was like, okay, I can see where he's coming from. Maybe he does realize right now that this is the end. I mean, he is playing terrible out there right now, and he looks sluggish. He just does not. It's not him out there. It's not the Kobe that we're all used to seeing. But this is ultimately what comes to you when you're playing 20 years in the league with the list of injuries he's had that would take a couple, this entire show to list them off pretty much.
I mean, just watching when the Warriors broke the record the other night against the Lakers to go 15-0. I thought that was. It was jarring. You know, I've seen some highlights. I only caught one or two Lakers games this season, and it was kind of on in the background for me because it's the Lakers, and they're just not a draw this year. They just aren't.
No.
Aside from now this announcement, there's going to be a farewell tour, and that'll be kind of cool to watch. But it was jarring to see Kobe miss wide-open jumpers, have, in one play, Steph blew by him. On the next play, on the very next play, Clay went right past him. And then to see, him shooting the jumper short, that's when, that's a sign to me that your legs aren't underneath you. And you see that for a lot of players just around the league in general on a back-to-back, on the the back end of a back-to-back. But we've seen that from Kobe all year. He's shooting 29% from the floor. So, but I was impressed with how he took it because of all, like I said, of all the players I've seen over the years in my lifetime, I would put Kobe right up there as far as just competitor. And those guys don't go out very easy. They don't relinquish the throne. You know what I'm saying?
I think the problem is, though, that just because of his injuries, he hasn't been playing for as long. The throne's already been kind of given up already at this point, just from the sheer number of games that he's missed the past three seasons.
Right.
And I think that in itself has, I think, kind of taken away the luster of continuing to play the game right now, that he's missed that much time right now, and to be able to kind of have a full another season again to maybe have a championship go.
Yeah.
This is not even a possibility. I think he sees that right now.
But I think that that self-reflection is sometimes, oftentimes, I should say, with athletes, especially superstars, and a player that was as great as Kobe. I mean, in my opinion, hands down, the second greatest two guard of all time, and not that far behind Michael Jordan, in my opinion. But I think self-reflection for those guys, because so much of being an athlete and playing at a professional level, you have to have a certain level of confidence that is uncommon.
No, right? No doubt. You have to be able to think you're better than the next person. You're going to make the shot. You have to.
Right. And
it's your job to.
And I think Kobe had that killer instinct, that, that lower jaw sticking out, pumping the chest, all that was so much of Kobe's persona. I think for that guy to be able to take a look in the mirror and just say, hey, I don't have it anymore, I commend him for that. Because he could have stuck around for another few years and continue to be bad and continue to get checks. And he decided, this is it. And, so I take my hat off to him. Before we continue to move on, we don't necessarily have to because this is huge news. But when you look back at Kobe's career, give me something that just stands out to you. Is it the 81-point game? Is it one of the MVP?
Honestly,
MVP run? Or
it's one play. There's a couple plays in particular. Just in particular, it's in a Portland against the Kobe stopper, Ruben Patterson.
Right.
Self-proclaimed Kobe
stopper. Right, right.
Yeah. It was end of the regular season, and we kind of it was for us to be able to win the Pacific Division, so we got the second seed in the conference. I believe it was 2002 or 2003.
Uh-huh.
We had Gary Payton and Karl Malone on that team, so it was 2002. That
right,
was
the end.
We're going for our four-peat.
Pistons.
Yes,
yeah,
we're going to our four-peat. So that got us into the playoffs. And we were down 3 points with like less than 5 seconds or something like on the clock. And Kobe hits this ridiculous three over Ruben Patterson to tie the game. That sends it into overtime. And I remember watching that game live in person, just going nuts right there.
Yeah.
And then a few minutes later in double overtime, he hits another game-winning three that wins us the game. And yeah. I was just like, it was just insane to be able to see. He had like those two shots, that one three in particular over Ruben Patterson, to me, I think is just, I remember the play, he was all over him too, didn't have a shot at all, and just somehow drilled a three that,
yeah.
Yeah, that's my moment. That's my Kobe Bryant moment right there. Just because of Ruben Patterson, I remember hating him because of him saying, I'm the Kobe stopper. And, you know, yeah. every single time he shunned him up, I was like, yes, that's my moment. That's my Kobe Bryant moment.
Yeah, you know, one in particular, I mean, a lot of people point to the 81-point game, which was just ridiculous, but that wasn't a nationally televised game.
Yeah, it was just the Raptors. Yeah, and, yeah,
unless you were in the Los Angeles or Toronto area or you had NBA League Pass, you probably didn't catch it live. So I didn't watch that one live. I just remember they played, I think, like the last 5 or 10 minutes on TNT or ESPN or one of them, or maybe even NBA TV. It doesn't matter. But I didn't get to see that live, so I didn't get the full effect and being able to actually watch him score all 81. For me, man, it was a much more personal experience. I got to, I was taken for my birthday to a Warriors-Lakers game, and we got to sit courtside. And shout to Greg Wellman, Josh Wellman, for hooking your boy up with tickets. This was before, keep in mind, the Warriors were good, so you could actually afford to sit courtside.
I was like, that's a dime. You're paying a pretty entire paycheck on there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, but I remember watching that game courtside, and one of the things you really get to see when you're that close, as opposed to watching a game at home, is just how strong these guys are. And I remember, I believe he went for 49. He may have went for 50 that game. I can't remember. It was a late February game. But seeing him and Jay Rich, and Jay Rich for the Warriors, Jason Richardson, of course, went off too. But just seeing the competitiveness and just seeing how bad, I mean, the Lakers already had the division wrapped up. Like I said, it was late February. They were by far and away the number one seed at that point. And just to see the competitive nature of Kobe in person and to see how bad he wanted it, that's always going to stick out with me. You know, because again, it's one thing to watch these guys on TV, but to see just how hard he played and how just much he wanted it. I mean, it's an intangible that we talk about all the time, you know, someone's will or drive or whatever, but, you know,
it was so intense you could see it, you know.
Yeah, it was something very real with Kobe, and I'm going to miss that. I'm also going to miss the Kobe. Hopefully he goes into media real soon, because I really am going to miss the some of the interviews as of late.
Oh, he will be there for sure. I mean, he talked about his documentary that he did, Muse.
Yeah.
He talked about how much he loved doing that, and that's his new project he's doing. And actually, if you guys don't know, he is doing a documentary at this last season. Correct. Apparently, he does have cameras following him around. So he's known about this for some time, and I think he's going to make another project out of that. And you can totally see that, especially the place that he was. L.A. was nothing but a great stepping stone for him into his next part of his life.
Absolutely.
Which, he was talking about how he has the ability to be able to pick up and talk to anyone in the big wigs in Hollywood right now because of the status, because he's Kobe Bryant, because the Lakers are who they are, and they have that status there, and he's taken there. He's been on that ride the entire time, so he's got nothing but ups. I think we're going to get nothing but more Kobe Bryant in the coming future. You know, it's going to be round-the-clock Kobe instead of just NBA Kobe.
Yeah, if you are a fan of Kobe Bryant, great interview to check out is with Kobe. He's on Bill Simmons' old podcast on the Grantland Network. You can look it up. It was Bill Simmons, Jalen Rose. And again, the first 17 years, Kobe never really said much aside from the whole drama with him and Shaq. But he was very guarded. For the first 5-6 years, he sounded identical to Michael Jordan the way he talked. But I really feel as he's aged and as his game, his on-court efficiency has gone down, the man he is with the media, the way he talks, the way he articulates himself has just been a real joy to watch. So
yeah, no, he's polished very well.
So I definitely look forward to seeing him in the very near future on one of our cable networks making buku bucks talking basketball. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Oh, no, that would be fun to see it. Speaking, he just started his own network.
Speaking of a lot of fun, have you been watching? That'd be the Golden State Warriors chant. No big deal. They are just off to an 18-0 start.
Ridiculous.
It's unbelievable.
No, nothing.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I've been a Warriors fan as long as I can remember. And obviously no one's ever seen this, so I'm not alone here. But just the way they move the ball, the way that, 10-point leads get erased in, three, four trips up and down the court. It's unbelievable.
You don't see them lose. I don't see them losing anytime soon. I honestly really don't. The thing. I mean, it can happen. You feel it's going to happen at some point.
They are on a 7-game road trip. I believe it's
and you got San Antonio
12
coming
days.
Up.
Yeah. They're on a long road trip without Harrison Barnes, who's going to be gone at least a week or two at minimum. The way he rolled his ankle was nasty, but can I give you some quick stats about the Warriors to kind of help put in perspective what they're doing?
I don't think me saying no would stop you from doing it.
Steph Curry is attempting 11.2 threes a game, up from 8.1 last year. He's shooting the exact same percentage. This has led, which was 44% and is 44%. This accounts to about 4.5 points, more points per game. Here's where it gets crazy. Steph Curry is a better shooter around the rim at 70%. Than LeBron James, okay? And LeBron has always been known as a finisher around the rim. And, look at the two of them next to each other, you would never be able to guess
really
that
is,
Steph. And that's that. I think that is the evolution of his game. Besides the ball handling, besides the passing, besides the shooting, it's really the fact that he's taking more shots around the rim and hitting them at a higher clip. It's been unreal.
Whenever he throws the ball up, I honestly expect it to go in. Like, that's just pretty much how it is. Like, it's really kind of weird when he misses. It's like, oh, he missed that.
He took a 30-footer the other night, and I was surprised when he barely missed. I was like, what's this?
Come on. It's like, what are you doing, Steph? Come on, get your game on. Like, make the shot, dog.
Steph's
you do
clearly
it.
Off
yeah,
tonight.
Yeah.
Here's another stat. The Warriors have spent more time this season leading by 15 or more points than they have spent trailing any opponents at any point this season.
It's honestly like I think all these stats are ridiculous. It's the fact that they're doing this on such a consistent basis. It's not one and two games. This is 18 games right now. That's a pretty large spread.
It's ridiculous. And the Warriors have scored 100 points or more in 44 straight home games, longest streak in two decades. And I don't want to get into the whole who gets credit, Bill Walton, Steve Kerr. I think that's kind of nonsense. I think it doesn't really matter.
It's a team.
At the end of the day, it's a total team thing from Joe Lacob and the owners to the front office with Jerry West in there, to the coaches, to the players. They've built their team well, they've drafted well, and they've obviously coached well. And last time I checked, I think it was 95, I could be wrong, but 95 or 97-20 since letting Mark Jackson go.
Sorry, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunate for Mark, but fortunate for the Warriors.
He's calling on a mic, I think. He's doing all right there.
But I just think the way they play basketball is so visually appealing. The way they move the ball, the unselfishness, giving up good shots to get great shots. We've all heard that saying before. But it's just been remarkable to watch them. And I don't remember if it was you or B I was talking to. And just when we were down, I don't want to say we. I don't play on the team, but I am a huge supporter. But when the Warriors were down 23 to the Clippers, I was saying, okay, we're going to come back. No problem.
Yeah.
And because there is no lead that's safe until it's all zeros on the clock with them. They score too quickly. They have too much confidence. And like I said last year, I think what really changed the whole outlook for this franchise in general was that Memphis series when they were down 2-1. And they came out and they obviously won the series. But the way they won it, once I said this was going to be a learning moment for them. You know, they're either going to lose and learn from this and come back next year and have that chip on their shoulder, or they're going to get that chip on their shoulder from this series. And since that series, they haven't lost many games. They've lost exactly two.
Yeah.
Since
Cleveland.
Yeah. And that's it.
That's it, yeah.
And so it's been...
It makes Christmas Day really spicy.
Oh, yeah. Warriors-Cleveland on Christmas Day. That's going to be a great one. And, you know, a lot more onus on that game if the Warriors can manage to stay undefeated. I don't think they will. I just think not having Harrison Barnes, going on a 7-game road trip is difficult. Doesn't matter. They could be playing the Sixers 7 times in a row. As long as it's on the road, it's not easy to do.
Yeah, that's very true. And everyone's gunning for them. They're going to get the best game from every team they face just because of the fact they wanted the guys that knock them off.
Yeah.
No one wants to let them keep winning.
You figure at some point they have to have that let-up game where they're tired, they're on the second night, you know, the back end of a back-to-back, they're tired, they're on the road, and they just can't muster. But every time, you know, I was watching the Kings game when they were playing the Kings the other night, and they looked terrible the first 7 minutes, and by the end of the first quarter, they were down 10 in the first, you know, 7-8 minutes, and by the end of the first quarter, they were leading. You know, it's... And leads just aren't safe. They get evaporated, and, you know, the train just keeps rolling. So, I mean,
great basketball we got going on. If you guys aren't watching them, I would highly recommend it. They are just a lot of fun games to watch for even not that big of a basketball fan. This might be a fun team for you to watch anyway.
On the other end of the spectrum here,
from
76ers.
Yeah, they're... doing the exact opposite.
Sam Presti said he had a plan of rebuilding this team, and I think it's genius. If you're a GM, just say that you're going to be awful for years and years and years, but you have a plan, and you don't need to show any proof of that plan, and you get to stay employed. And it's pretty awesome for Sam Presti in the front office there, but I think it's pretty despicable what they're doing to their... The game should be free. They're 0-18. Warriors are 18-0. They are 0-18. Worst start in league history. It's terrible basketball. And their rookie, their star, Jahlil Okafor, had a little incident.
He had a fun weekend, yeah.
Yeah, where he was on TMZ getting involved in a bar fight. You see him throwing punches. And it's just, it's a mess there.
Like I said, the complete opposite end of the spectrum of what's going on in Golden State.
Yeah, and this is what happens, in my opinion, when you have a team with no veteran leadership. If nothing else, and this is my problem with the Kings for so many years, you can have all the young talent in the world. You have to have young, older guys who have been there, done that, played in the league to give these younger guys some perspective. You need an older guy to grab Jahlil Okafor and say, hey, look, young fella, you know, this isn't how we do this.
I mean, he got caught with a fake ID as well. Yeah, that's what you want. You want your star NBA athlete to be caught with a fake ID.
Exactly. So... If you don't know the story, in a nutshell, someone came up to him, said the Sixers stink, which is absolutely accurate. He took offense to it, got real immature and said, you're broke and I make more money than you, which is just always lovely.
Yeah.
And then got in an altercation with this guy that was caught on camera. Now this guy is probably going to get paid for being, you know, a jerk and, you know, causing this whole situation. But, you know, you can't have rabbit ears when you're in Jahlil Okafor's situation. But this, again, this is why you need veteran leadership in the locker room. You know, I feel like Boogie Cousins on the Kings is another guy that if they had more veteran leadership, some of these things he's doing off, not even necessarily off the court, but these emotional outbursts would be tempered a little bit by having an older guy who's been there, done that, and can kind of grab these younger guys and say, hey, it's not how we do it here, man, but...
You're not going to make it in the league very long if you continue doing what you're doing.
No, but I don't want to talk much Sixers basketball as we're getting out of here because it's just depressing. So, moving on, the USC Trojans made a coaching hire, did they not?
They did, yeah.
Chad
Helton.
Yeah. He was an interim coach, and then they basically said, hey, you're on full time. So, you know, a little newsy topic there for you. Mark Richt for Georgia, the Georgia Bulldogs, gets fired on Sunday. And Les Miles didn't have a job, and then he did have a job. The head coach at LSU, after a 3-game losing skid, was all but out the door. And then they play well this weekend, and Jimbo Fisher essentially didn't want the job and basically used his leverage with LSU coming after him to negotiate a better contract with Florida State, and now Les Miles has his job again.
Good on you, Jimbo. You kept Les's job. So,
right.
I mean, granted, Les Miles still the Mad Hatter, still a he's still a solid coach, still a solid option. The LSU's not really getting that bad of a deal, I feel, but they get really hasty down there in the South when things don't go their way.
They sure do, and I just, you know, I think this is one of those situations where you can really, it's one of those reality versus perception situations. The reality is you're LSU. You're one of the best programs in the country. 5 of the last 10 years, you've had top 10 finishes, 2 trips in the national championship game, 1 national championship under your belt since Les Miles took over for Nick Saban. And it's just one of those things that it's a bit ridiculous to have the expectation that every year you're going to win a championship or be in the SEC championship game. It's unrealistic.
Very true.
That is the most loaded conference for the past however many years, and it's going to remain that way probably for a while. The fact of the matter is football just means more in the South than it does in any other region in the country. And
Each state really identifies with those schools that are there.
They really do.
It's a staple.
It really is. And I think for LSU and Georgia alike, you know, you can't have that expectation of championship or bust every season. It's not realistic. And in college, who the hell even knows who's good? Alabama loses to a Mississippi team who hasn't beat anyone this year. Alabama really hasn't beat anyone this year. Besides, when they beat LSU, LSU is 2 in the country. Since then, they've lost 2 in the row. Stanford looked terrible. Now they look great. Utah was beating the hell out of everyone. Now they're losing. I don't know who's good. Yeah. I have no idea who's good. Okay?
Other than Clemson, the fact that they haven't lost yet, that's the only reason why you've been able to stay where you're at right now. And pretty much that's really what you have to do in football, in college football, is to win out completely if you don't want to lose out. Because someone's going to get gypped no matter what.
Absolutely.
It's such a loaded right now in the terms of that top 4. Everyone's trying to get in. It should be interesting, definitely. I mean, only the fans. We